This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows, and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. League of Legends World 2019 is less than a week away, and joining me to give a world's preview and to discuss the upcoming patch, as well as Bjergsen's free agency, is Invin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, before we go into World's Championship, patch 9.19 was released. Is there any buffs, nerfs, or changes we can expect?
Absolutely, yeah. So patch 9.19 is important because even if you're not a big fan of League of Legends esports, this is the World Championship patch, which means that you shouldn't expect a ton of big changes. Remember that this patch really has the pro players in mind even more than usual. So I'm going to go through a bit of the changes and also kind of explain which ones I feel were kind of made more toward the professionals, maybe compared to previous patches. For example, the very first two champions they touched up, which might come as a surprise to people, were Aatrox and Akali. Now, Aatrox and Akali have been solo lane staples, both mid and top lane. We've even seen Aatrox in the jungle on certain patches for pretty much the better part of like 15 months now. Both champions' reworks, they've been absolutely unstoppable, but they got really over-nerfed in the last couple patches. I think that they were still playable, but definitely like so nerfed to the point that you did really have to kind of reconsider how their kits interact with their respective matchups. And so we see some slight buffs to Akali and Aatrox after these nerfs that happened in 9.18. Riot admitted they over-nerfed, and I think this is less about, oh, hey, we think these champions really are this bad, and more of, wow, pro has been playing these champions for so long, and we're going to change them this much right before the biggest tournament of the year. So I think it's more about making sure that these champions are still playable. I think we're going to have to wait to see whether them on the world stage to see whether the nerfs really affect them, but I think they're both going to be fine. They just won't be quite as unstoppable as they were, but they will be stronger than they were on the last patch. More really important changes, though, are, you know, like, for example, I'm just going to go over a couple. Blitzcrank's Q, his rocket grab, you know, very iconic ability, now has 100 extra range. So he can, like, now grab a blue buff from multiple locations over the wall. So we might see some more Blitzcrank at Worlds. That's a huge change, given how important that is to his kit. Gragas has been an extremely strong jungler for the better part of the year now. His W gives him, I'd say, a little too much healing, which was clear speed for his early game, because when he hits 6, he's so strong. So they're just higher as far as maximum health is through damage ratio. So hopefully it'll be a little bit longer for you completely unhinged in game. But he has been Mordekaiser, who we talked about his release, you know, a few months ago, and we were talking about how on that show about how game changing he could be at the pro level, and he really just hasn't been. he really hasn't done a lot, at least at the professional level, or even in games at every level. I think he's maybe a bit less powerful than we expected, and so I think that he's getting this slight W change where he's like the shield he gets from the damage dealt is 35% of the damage he deals to 30, which is good. And previously, when he went ult, someone could not see him or the other person, or they could see each other on the screens. Now you'll be able to kind of see them as shadows. The team with Mordekaiser, you'll be able to back him up. If you're on the team with the person being attacked by Mordekaiser, you'll be there as soon as possible to help them. Orianna got a buff to her ultimate, which makes sense. Orianna gets buffed before every world championship, and she's also in a place where other control mages do better things than she does right now, that she really doesn't have a place in the meta. So I think putting some buffs on her best and most unique ability, I think, is a fun way for her to come back into the meta in a way that we won't see her dominate, but this is Orianna. This is arguably the legacy mid lane pick of this game across a decade, right? So I think we will see some people pull her out at Worlds. I think she's in a spot where, you know, there's so many pro players who have so many games on her that she's just very comfortable, very good in a lot of matchups. So I say the meta is always healthier when she's in it, so I think it's a good thing. We haven't seen much Ornn. Tank top laners aren't exactly the biggest thing right now. We're all into our Aurelias and our Pantheons, right? When Ornn reaches level 12, his Masterwork upgrades, they're free. So it used to be level 13, and that's actually, like, I know that it's just at one level and it doesn't sound like that big, but that's actually huge. That's going to be around the point of the game where, like, Ornn can make the biggest impact, and, like, Ornn, like, that one level difference, you know, could be the difference between, like, a dragon or something along those lines. That's really, really big for him, I think, especially at the top level. Again, some of these changes are going to seem, like, not that big of a deal in a vacuum, but at the professional level, there's so much context to them. Couple more I'm going to go over. I'm not going to go over everyone because it's all these little tiny minuscule things, but another one that I'm really happy to see is that Sylas is getting nerfed. Since Sylas got released, he's essentially been pick or ban, and across three roles can be played. He can play mid, top, and jungle. He has so much to offer. And so he's getting some base stat nerfs, like to his armor and stuff, which I think is good. And his passive is getting nerfed too, because frankly, this champion just has too many good things. He's too all-around good, which is why we see him pick so much. When he's not banned, he's picked immediately, because you can find a place for him. He can play in three different roles, and he has relatively good matches for a melee champion as well. Tahm Kench can actually heal 100% of his health back now. However, in the early levels, it's going to be much less gray health. So we might see Tahm Kench kind of reserved more for people or teams who are looking to go to more towards the late game aspects for tank supports. If you want to play more early game tank supports, your Nautilus, Alistar, even Braum will probably be their choices. And let's see here. There's some bug fixes and all that good stuff. And we have some new patches. We have some skins to the Immortal Journey line. Majestic Empress Morgana is one I really like. Splendid Staff Nami, Valiant Riven. And then we also have a Prestige Edition for that one. Ryze will be getting a Championship skin, which is weird. Not weird, but he has so many skins already, but it does look pretty cool. And then there's also my personal favorite of the patch, which is Hextech Amumu. I haven't seen an Amumu skin in some time, and this one looks great.
Hextech Amumu, I like that. That sounds good in itself. Now, I noticed in the last patch that Teemo was given a bit of a quality life change. Now he can carry 5 like mushrooms. Do you think this was a good change for him, or they should have done more?
This is so much fun, right? Like, I feel like we've talked about Teemo month over month and how he's getting like these tiny, tiny little changes. And like, at least at the top level, we haven't seen a ton of it come to fruition. We haven't really seen, even at, you know, the regular, like everyday player level, maybe these are helping him be objectively a little better, but they're not like, you know, massively changing his impact on the game or anything like that. However, I think that we might finally be at a place where we might actually see some Teemo at the competitive level now. And I say that because I'll get more into all of the different players, but there is a top laner and teams later, but there is a player at Worlds named Gugax who is attending, who is known for playing Teemo at the competitive level. He's not in a major region, but still it is a top professional level game. He will be at Worlds. And with, you know, the meta and the top lane really being a lot of melee focused, a lot of AD fighter type champions, like, you know, Ruin said in a interview recently, the CLG top laner, that he would not be surprised if he saw Teemo picked at Worlds, because it does, in a vacuum, play very well individually into a lot of these lane matchups. And so I'm not sure, right? Like, I don't think this is going to change his play style, but I do think this might be the push he needs to be more viable than he ever has been in the past.
I think he went from annoying to toxic. That's me.
Yeah, no, I mean, because the idea here is, right, is that, like, hey, if you can take advantage of your pre-level 6 and really abuse that lane, you're going to draw a lot of pressure from their jungler. But if you have more mushrooms to lay down as the game progresses, you know, maybe in the late game, Teemo can, you know, use more mushrooms to have more of that, like, zoning security. You know, like, if he can have 5 mushrooms at max level, that could actually be pretty big for, because really that's where he falls off is the late game. He can't do anything in the late game. And so maybe his role changes. Maybe he's more focused on kind of planting these mushrooms and camping and being kind of a mage type. That would still be surprising to me, because I don't think his mushrooms do quite enough damage for that. But having 5 of them might change the whole game. You know, it's really going to be hard to tell with Teemo, but I would say what I can say definitively is that he's in a better spot than he's been in years.
Now, jumping to Worlds, I have to ask, TSM, now they missed another World Championship. And in your opinion, what is their team lacking? Because this is like a legacy team. They should be doing so much better.
I think that's actually the problem. I think that they were always so good in the past that, one, I think the organization is more willing to cling on to old ideals. Some of their practice methods or training methods were leaked via a player on their team's stream. And without, I can't put it more delicately, they're archaic. Like, I cannot believe a professional organization is evaluating their players in this way. You know, and I also think there's something to be said for, you know, their fan base is used to winning. Like, these players, hands down, these players have more pressure on them. People who don't like TSM want to see them lose. And the fans want them to win and are so upset when they don't win. There just seems to be a culture, because it's not about, I can't blame this on the players, because yeah, we can point out a lot of things, but the random like roster moves to put in Spica, who has like 3 games of LCS experience for whatever reason, when you have 2 junglers with years of experience in the roster, he even switching between, it was just weird. Like, for me, it's not really about the players, it's about the organization in multiple ways needs to adapt to get with the current times, and they can't rely on the old TSM way anymore. They need to grow, they need to adapt, they need to progress, because everybody else is starting to catch up, and soon it's not going to be that TSM is just one of the best teams. Soon it's that TSM is the place you don't want to go, because it is harder to play there, because their training methods are archaic, because reputation there is hard to come by, because their fans are more rude. The team's results are fine, but the talent on that roster and the way that it was managed, and then the results following, like, it's unbelievable, really.
Now, Bjergsen, he's up for free agency. Do you think he's going to stay?
everyone's talking about him leaving. And I think that's a very normal knee-jerk reaction. He's clearly the best player on the team. There's been several PSN teams with him, you know, at the helm that have, I'd say, underwhelmed internationally or, like, not lived up completely to the expectations of what they could have been on paper. And so I think that it's very it's easy to be like, well, it's obviously the Orcs' problem, and, you know, your team will probably go somewhere else. I personally think he will stay. He's spent the majority of his pro career on TSM. I really think he can call the shots on that team, too. Not literally in the game, but what I mean is, like, I think that, you know, obviously every player is input, but if Bjergsen wants something, it happens, is the impression that I get on TSM. So what I would like to see, I think he will stay because he only had, like, a split under his belt before joining TSM. It's so much of his identity and his brand and every aspect of who he is, and it's really all he knows. I would be very surprised to see him leave, but I hope if he stays that he takes a more authoritative role in the direction of the team. I don't see TSM ever getting the most out of what they have. And I don't know how that needs to change, but it does. If he was to leave, it would either be, I think, to return to Europe, just go back to cultural roots, maybe, you know, maybe he misses home. I don't know. I could see him being like, yeah, you know, this isn't working if I'm not going to make worlds. But I think he'll stay on TSM. I really do. I think the chances of him going to another team in the LCS are extremely, extremely slim. However, if there was one where I would expect him to go, it would be 100 Thieves, because every other team who's, like, good right now, like Team Liquid doesn't want Bjergsen. They have Jensen, who I think is a stronger player right now. Nine doesn't want Bjergsen. The other thing that works for them, and Nissi and Bjergsen are so stylistically different, that wouldn't work. Not to mention, there's a whole, you know, it wouldn't make sense for Cloud9 to get him. So I think the only thing for North America that would make sense if Bjergsen had a different place than TSM would be someone who can afford him, which is hard, and somewhere where he feels like he can not only be in charge and, you know, have a lot of control over how the team is formed, but also somewhere that he feels like there's going to be a future. And I would say that would have to be 100 Thieves, just because they do have big budget. They had a down year. They know they need to do better. They had a little sort of uptick at the end. But results aside, that's probably the most well-put-together organization that Bjergsen can go through right now, who could match his salary at TSM, and also where he would feel he'd have a chance at winning and also have a chance at, like, still being a big part of things. So based on that, I don't think it's likely he goes back to Europe. And like I said, I already think it's extremely unlikely for him to go to anywhere else in the LCS. So I think that it's most likely that he stays on TSM. But those are the other potential options if they were to happen, I would say.
Now, jumping to different teams, I saw the LEC finals between Fnatic and G2. What was nuts about G2 was that they like to play with their food a lot. I noticed that when it's a 3-5 match, when it's three times, like two times they'll lose the match. And I think personally, G2 is trying to figure out their play style. That particular match between Fnatic and G2, man, they broke Reckless to the point of tears. What do you think of that match? Like, what did you think of their play style?
It was really exciting. It was absolutely epic. In fact, we were actually at the LCS studio, and they elected to actually start our series late because the audience was so enthralled with this G2 Fnatic match, and so we ended up watching that live for the first, like, hour and a half of when our broadcast was supposed to start. It was really fun. That series was fantastic. I'd say G2 versus Fnatic is the best rivalry in League of Legends esports right now, if not just esports in general. Like, it's absolutely insane. Part of that, it is a double-edged sword in the way that, like, yes, these teams push each other to do crazy things, but I think it goes a little too far, and I think it's just the teams won't play chicken and they'll do some dumb stuff. And I think that we did see some of that in this series, but I also think there's some importance to that in G2 being able to test the limits of their chaos. You know, this is how they play all year long, and I think it's important for them to go into the World Championship fully aware of how far they can push the envelope against these teams like, you know, Invictus Gaming, Griffin, Fun Plus Phoenix, these really, really strong Eastern teams that are not going to be as thrown off, potentially, or are going to be able to match that aggression and that individual skill level that G2 can flex and boast in all of their roles. So I think it's important that G2 knows exactly what they can and can't do in every situation. And so I'm kind of okay with, I agree with you, I think they pushed the envelope a little bit and they did play a little too loose in the playoffs, but the only way they could have learned that is by doing it, right? And they still won. So I think that we'll see a slightly more polished G2. But expect the same style, expect the same crazy, wacky picks. But there's something special about G2 Fnatic where both those teams just kind of sort of just throw each other's bodies at the wall until someone stops moving. So I think that that's like, there is like an extra gear of G2 versus Fnatic that's just absolute insanity. But overall, I think G2 will look relatively the same, but it's a little more polished coming into the World Championship.
Yeah, that match was insane. There was so much emotions because I was rooting for G2 in the beginning, and they were like losing lane after lane, and then the first match was gone. Yep. And I was like, oh my God, no. And then the second match, they were gone. And then the third match comes around, and you're like, this isn't the same team. This isn't the same players. They're cheating.
Right.
And it was just so much emotions because you could see how tilted Fnatic was. And it just went all downhill for these guys. It was a really wild ride all the way through.
Yeah, and part of it's really cool. I mean, like, a player of Reckless's level, like, at this point could be mailing it or not caring. It was really nice to see that how much he still cares about the win. And, you know, there were certain Fnatic players who said after losing, because they lost to G2 in a reverse sweep earlier in the playoffs. Like, this is their second close series in about a week's time. This is now, like, you know, there were certain players with Fnatic saying that this hurt worse than losing Worlds. You know? Like, so that's what I'm saying. This is a bona fide rivalry. Veterans, rookies, they're all invested in this thing. That's why you saw those kind of passionate reactions. And so I also think, like, based on how they played, like, this wasn't just G2 playing worse than Fnatic, like, taking a few games. Like, Fnatic came in with specific plans against G2 to expose, the cracks in their armor. And there aren't that many of them, but they did. And they should be proud of that. I think Fnatic is an extremely strong team that should not be at all underestimated in their group. They're kind of being written off because they have both SK Telecom and RNG in their group. But I really don't think they should be counted out. It's just G2 to 5 games twice. That is no easy feat.
Now, for the 2019 World Championships, where's it going to be played at?
2019 World Championship is going to take place in Europe. There will be different rounds. I'm not sure if you wanted me to go into the format, but it's going to be played across about a month and a week's time. The play-in takes place in Berlin, Germany, and that'll be from October 2nd to the 8th of October. And that will decide what four teams from the play-in round will join other 12 teams who have already qualified for the main group stage of the World Championship. So once we have those 16 teams, they will also play in Berlin from October 12th to October 20th in the main group stage. You know, 16 teams, four groups, four teams each. And the top two teams from each group will then be, you know, put into the quarterfinals. So those eight teams will then go to Madrid. That's where the quarterfinals and the semifinals the following weekend will be held. And then the grand finals, the last two teams, that will be in Paris, France on November 10th. So that's when and where the tournament will conclude.
So do you know what prize pool is going to be for the championship?
Yes, it's a $2 million prize pool for the tournament.
Wow, $2 million. That's pretty big. Is this average?
Actually, yeah. For League of Legends, I would say. I mean, it's been $2 million for the last couple of years, so this isn't entirely surprising in that regard. You know, I would even say that we could even see it go up next year simply because we talked about the Fortnite World Cup a few months back, and the prize pool there just kind of threw the curve, right? Like you have a $30 million prize pool, all of a sudden everything else looks kind of small. I think that's actually, like, pretty normal for a game of League of Legends size, $2 million. Like I said, they've had that type of prize pool in the last few World Championships, so I think we might even see an increase in the future. But there's also a chance that Riot does other things, like, you know, microtransactions that, you know, help go towards, you know, a team's, you know, like, prize pool at Worlds or whatever. They've done that before where it's like, oh, if you get an icon to support your team, you know, depending on how many that you get, if they make quarterfinals, they might get extra money. There's a lot of different stuff that, like, I don't remember the details, but Riot has done in-game activations based on Worlds in the past, so we'll have to see, but as of right now, yeah, $2 million.
Now, I saw the drawings for the championship groups, and C9 is in the bracket with G2. Do you think that C9's going to make it out?
This is really interesting, because we don't know who the fourth team is going to be, but they're kind of an afterthought, because G2, Griffin, and C9 all in the same group is absolutely insane, because Cloud9 is quite a good team, but Griffin's very good. Griffin is, you know, has had the best record in the LCK regular season for the last 2 years running, like, straight. They're a team of rookies. Like, I think their oldest player is, like, 19, and they're incredibly good, but they always fall short in the big game. They usually end up getting beat by Faker and SKT right when it matters most. So this is their first time getting to the World Championship, but unlike the, you know, Korean teams in the past have always been known for their, you know, slower, more methodical play style. Even in this meta, SKT does kind of play a little more controlled, but Griffin plays a lot like G2 does. They throw things at the wall. They do very weird picks. In fact, last year in Korea, we were talking about Teemo earlier, Viper played Teemo ADC in LCK Spring last year. Like, they play these really, really weird things, and they're very, very much like a Korean G2. And if you really look at Cloud9, they kind of play that way, too. Cloud9 has the most deaths and the most kills of, like, any winning team in North America. Like, their rates are incredibly high because they fight. That's what they do. And so I think it's really exciting because these three teams all play that exact same style. It's going to make for such exciting games regardless of the results. Now, as far as the results themselves and Cloud9's hopes for getting out, I think it's really easy for people to write them off because Griffin's an elite team and G2 is, you know, de facto best team in the world. It's the MSI champions, right? But, you know, we've seen Griffin fall short before in, you know, in these big matches. They're young players. It's their first time on the world stage. And we've seen Cloud9 come out of groups in much, much worse odds situations. Just last year, they had much worse odds to get out. So for me, it's just a matter of, like, I think Cloud9 has as good of a chance as last year, if not more so. But who knows? You know, it's different. Cloud Nine usually kind of goes through the play-in. They're usually the third seed. They go through the gauntlet, go through the play-in, and they kind of arrive at Worlds already sort of warmed up. I don't know if their experience or their performance will be different starting right from the main stage. It's hard to say because the last 4 years in a row, they've always qualified as the third seed from North America. So I think what we're going to have to see is I think Cloud9 have just as good a shot at getting out, unless maybe their power relies on people not believing in them. Maybe then they'll go 0-6. I don't know. Because I do think that they have a perfectly fine shot getting out. I wouldn't think it'd be out of the question for them to, you know, force a tiebreaker with Griffin and then win that tiebreaker because, like I said, Griffin is young. They choke under pressure because they don't have experience, and Cloud9 is the exact opposite. They have a lot of experience, and their culture, that goes down to their younger players. Their younger players are... They're cold as ice. They might underperform, but Cloud9 doesn't really choke. They might lose, but they don't choke. So I think that their chances are good unless there's some crazy like Negaverse C9 energy that's going to stop them from doing anything good at all because they made it as the second seed this year instead of the third.
Now that's true about C9. I mean, one of the things that you can always expect for them to do is to reset. And I think that comes from experience, is that they know, hey, we can't keep pushing. Let's reset, and then we can come and do an offensive attack again. And they're also reckless, though. So you don't know. They'll tower dive, and they'll get the kill, and then they die. But, you know, it's exciting regardless. So I'm not going to lie. I hope it's G2 versus C9 so they can get out the bracket. I really want to see how that's going to work out.
Yeah, I mean, that would be absolutely nuts and totally a possibility. Like, again, not only do these three teams all play the same style, it's all a very bloody, brutal style. Like, we don't know how these games are going to turn out. These teams kind of play on a coin flip, and they'll take the 50-50 because they think they're better coordinated than you. They're all very aggressive teams, so we could see some very, very surprising results just based off of that. But I really think that I'd say that anybody who's immediately counting Cloud9 out is out of their minds. But I would also say anybody who says they're a shoo-in to get out of the groups is also kind of off their rocker a little bit, too. I think they have a good chance, not a great chance, but at least 50-50.
Who are you looking to win this world championship? I'm a little curious about that.
This is so hard. I've been thinking about this since I saw the group draw. I'm going to have to say, like, I'm going to go on record on this show. I'm going to say that my favorite right now is SK Telecom T1. I don't think that they have the most current meta-focused playstyle. Like I said, they play a little more slower and more controlled, but I was really impressed by how well they towered up in the playoffs. They had to play the wild card match to get into the main Korean playoffs. They lost one game in that, and they swept their next three series in the playoffs and then beat Griffin 3-1 for the finals. So I think they look really good. I think Faker's going to be hungry since he missed Worlds last year. I think their jungler, Quid, might be like the best jungler in the world, or at least in the top three conversation alongside Tarzan from Griffin and like Tion from FunPlus Phoenix. I think I have to go with SKT because I think it's really even between, you can make a case for SKT, you can make a case for G2, and I think you can make a case for either of the first two Chinese teams in FunPlus Phoenix and RNG as well. But I think I have to go with SKT because Faker's back at Worlds. I don't think he's going to settle for anything less, and I don't think there's any clear favorite. And I think as the series goes on, as the tournament goes on as well, SKT have the deepest pockets in terms of strategy, in terms of what they can pull out, and they've been in this situation before more than all the other teams, so I'm going with them.
Yeah, I was thinking between SKT and G2, but SKT has Faker, and Faker is the GOAT of LOL, so you really can't go against the GOAT.
Yeah, and you know, I did an interview with a color caster, Zale, he casted the LCS a few months back, and he was telling me, he's like, yes, G2 is the best team in the world, not taking anything away from them. That being said, they beat TL 3-0 in the MSI Finals, but if you go back to their semifinal series, they beat SKT, but it was five games, and frankly, there were two opportunities in the two games that G2 came back to win that series where SKT, frankly, could have won. Like one of those games was due to the worst Baron call I've ever seen SK Telecom make in the history of their organization. Like, no hyperbole. I've gone back and looked. And so I think that it's like, you can make a case for G2, but just to say, oh, well, they beat them 3-2 at MSI, SKT doesn't have a chance. Like, that's ridiculous. Go back and watch that series. It was inches, you know? And I would say that SKT as a team has had at least the same amount of growth that G2 has had this summer, if not more so. Because of how they've been challenged, because of their midsummer slump, because of their stronger domestic competition. That's why I'm glad that for G2 that Fnatic put up a fight. Because if G2 just rolled over all of Europe, they would come to the world to get smashed. The best teams in the regions need more domestic competition to become better. And so I think that's why there's a case for both of those teams.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining me. I appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Geraci, or take a look at my work in venglobal.com/author/Nick+Geraci. But aside from that, you know, I'm always down to talk League of Legends, Fortnite, esports, all that stuff. So thank you so much for having me on.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.